Come on in, please be seated. The next case on our docket is the Town of Dillon versus Yatra Condominiums Homeowners Association. Argument is set for hour, half hour aside, and the petitioner will have to be back at your time. Both parties ready? That being said, a couple of quick housekeeping matters. Please tell us who you are when you start your argument and who you represent. And in addition, I want to let everybody know that we use some of these iPads and we're not surfing and answering emails. We have all our briefs and notes on the iPads and the links to Westlaw. So with that, we'll get it.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Andy Nathan, and I represent the petitioner of the Town of Dillon. This case asks an interesting and important question. It's whether a property owner has the right to ask the court to become an arbiter of a wholly municipal issue like who can park when and where on the town property. These are decisions that are made daily by towns. In this case, the courts below ignored the town's analysis, ignored the town's reasoning, and essentially did its own legislative balancing act. It took the rights of the town and what the town said it needed to do versus the imposition on the Yacht Club, and essentially did what the legislature had already done. The courts below should have employed the analysis this court requires, which is that the legislation is presumed to be valid unless proven beyond a reasonable doubt to be so bereft of reasonableness of basis that it is arbitrary. Instead of determining whether the town's legislation had any rational relationship to health, safety, and welfare issues, the courts below said the town had other alternatives which we think we prefer. The result is that the courts below gave away the town's right of way in the vicinity, and that's the term they use, and we don't know what that means, but somewhere around the Yacht Club, the right of way is now the sole property, the sole use of the Yacht Club. The right of way includes a recreational path. The cars now get parked on that. So, the Yacht Club made a repeated point of arguing that its members on overflow parking, like every other condominium association in Dillon, have to walk from the town lots on the rec path or other routes to their condominium. Now, they don't have to do that because they get to park in the town's rec path. But everyone else in town has to avoid cars while they're using that rec path, if they can use it at all, or they have to go into it.
So this reconfiguration here didn't result in any takings litigation as such?
No, because it's all on town property.
So the theory here is the town is somehow stopped from having visitors or owners of this condominium project be able to park in perpetuity on the right-of-way. Is that kind of what the gist of it is?
A stop, or that the balance weighs in favor of the Yacht Club being able to use the town's right-of-way as its parking, because otherwise it will lose value.
But the value isn't reflected in any kind of condemnation proceeding?
No. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even put down in terms of dollars and cents in front of the town council. That came into the trial when the Yacht Club hired a realtor to opine about the loss in value because of the absence of parking. Okay. And the Yacht Club still has its own parking spots. The town hasn't affected those parking spots. What the town has said is that you may not tenant park. And tandem parking is an unusual thing. It's kind of like double parking, only it's more dangerous. tandem parking is one car parks and another car parks behind it. And you do that all around, and yes, you double your parking, but you create issues that are clearly safety issues. I mean, everyone that testified at trial testified that this was inconvenient, and everyone who testified for the town, which included two police chiefs with 65 years experience, a traffic engineer with 35 years experience, the town engineer, the town public works director, all testified that tandem parking is dangerous. And as the yacht club has transitioned over the years, becoming less vacation and more long-term leases, and as units were divided, there's a need, the yacht club, for greater parking. But the yacht club does not propose to solve its own issues or propose to use the town lots. It asked the town to give its property and pay its money to solve its issues.
Could I ask just one question about the spatial arrangement?
Yes.
You've got a nice map here. It's not the macro situation, but kind of the micro. I wasn't sure I understood because of the emphasis on the tandem parking. So is the first car on Yacht Club property and only the second sticks out on?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, that's typically what happens.
But I'm sorry to still pick up on that. I also understood that YCC members were parking across the street. Is that reflected on this map?
Well, this map reflects the current configuration of the road that was built. Remember, we started out with a chip seal road with no drainage pans to delineate where it was. And now it's an actual road with drainage pans and drainage, and this is the rec path and sink, and then this is the town right away to the north, town right away to the south.
Is the area colored in green?
I'm sorry?
The town's right away is the area colored in green on the map.
Well, I'm not sure I understood what you're asking, but I'm a little hard of hearing, so
The area in colored in green, is that the town's right-of-way?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Green is the town's right-of-way, and this is the rec path. It's a countywide rec path. It runs along Tenderfoot, goes all the way through the town.
Thank you.
So, in this case, the town had a construction project. There was a bond issue. Citizens voted that they wanted to reconstruct a number of roads. The town prioritized them. This was the second project, and it dealt with Upper and Lower Bull Run and Tenderfoot. And the town had a hearing on this construction project. And at that hearing, the staff testified and presented an analysis of all the options that were offered, and the Yacht Club people testified, and their own attorneys were allowed to testify and argue. And then the town board, town council, the legislative body made up of town citizens, did its own analysis and concluded that for safety reasons, for snow storage reasons, for a variety of other reasons, the town's configuration of the project was the best. Now, it's not a question of whether another configuration is better in someone's eyes than the town's configuration. It's only a question of whether the town's configuration has a reasonable basis, in fact, and is related to the health, safety, and welfare of the community.
Mr. Nathan, do you think we should accept the analysis in the Goldblatt case?
No, I think Goldblatt's a takings case, and that although we argue analysis, I don't think it's applicable here. But even if you accepted Goldblatt, the facts of Goldblatt are that the company that sued for taking said your regulations have taken away all our use of this property, and for no really good reason. And the court said, yeah, well, maybe the reasons are suspect, but there were reasons, and that's enough.
Well, let me ask you this then. It's an as-applied challenge, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what do we do, or how do we look at the findings of fact by Judge Ruckman?
Well, you accept the actual findings of fact, conclusions of law, Unless.
Business about it.
By evidence.
Okay.
And in our briefing, we went through a bunch of facts, and he says it's not supported by evidence.
But he found that it was a menace and so forth. Seemed to me, do you think we're bound by that?
No, I don't think you're bound by the fact that his opinion was that it's a menace. I think you're bound by the fact that he said that you could go way north.
Well, sure.
Or that you could do other.
I'm sure the other side was stipulated to those facts.
Well, anyway, after this hearing, the town council made a unanimous decision that this was its preferred and the best alternative. The yacht club did present a bunch of alternatives, and there was no engineer who testified about the yacht club's alternatives at the town council, no planner, no discussion of its viability, no testimony at the hearing about it from a real estate agent about how much value he opined the yacht club would lose. And incidentally, speaking of the trial judge, he said that that testimony, in closing arguments, that that testimony was highly suspect given all the other evidence. But let's assume we accept that there is an imposition and a burden and a monetary effect. Anytime a city or municipality changes its parking regulations or expands a street to remove parking because it wants to go from 2 to 4 lanes, you might have an effect on the property surrounding it. Do we want the courts then to come in and decide who's right, who's wrong, or do we want the courts to look at whether or not the municipality's decision was not arbitrary? It was based on some fact. And that's what we're arguing here. We're saying that the lower courts gave near lip service to the requirements specifically set by this court. Courts are not to test the weight and sufficiency of the facts used to sustain the conclusions of the legislative body. Fairly debatable questions as to an ordinance's reasonableness, wisdom, and propriety are for the legislature, and the court's sole inquiry is whether a factual basis for the ordinance is so wanting as to make it purely arbitrary. And that's the test that wasn't employed, but should have been, and the test that we're asking this court to employ. Now, it's unclear from the underlying courts exactly what option that was proposed by the yacht club they thought was satisfactory and better. There were 4 options proposed. One, trial, which was, well, take the rec path and instead of putting a long oblong circle, run it right along the lake. Of course, that means you got to buy or somehow condemn or somehow get property from every other person along that lake. And if the yacht club would voluntarily give up its property, but we have to get it from everyone else, and we have to get permission from the Denver Water Board. That was the testimony. It's not a viable option. There's no engineering that says that's a good option. It won't flood. It's going to be stable. There's nothing that says that. Everything says that's not a good option. Okay? There's 3 other options. But let's remember, all these options have one basic requirement, and that is that there be tandem parking. They all require that. So let's take the first option. Move everything to the north. That's an option that was proposed. Now, it's the yacht club's burden to show you were arbitrary. No expert from the yacht club explained why that was a good alternative. Every expert who testified at trial explained why that was not the best alternative. But it suffers from 2 major flaws, as was testified to. First of all, it requires canyon parking. Second of all, it eliminates snow storage, which is used by the town along the northern edge. So, town raised other issues, they're in the record. ADA issues if it allowed the yacht club to use its right of way as a parking lot, the cost of adding more asphalt and more plowing. But the main 2 things were tandem parking and snow storage. So let's look at tandem parking. There is no tandem parking anywhere else in the town of Dillon. According to the two police chiefs who testified and the traffic engineer, combined 100 years of experience in municipal traffic control, there is no tandem parking anywhere that they're aware of in the state of Colorado. Why? Because besides being inconvenient, it's dangerous. Now, if you're pulling out of a parking spot on the Lackhook property here, and you've got a car on each side, you have to hopefully utilize the small amount of right-of-way there to back out of that and look both ways, make sure that you're not going to get hit or hit some hole. When you have tandem parking, you're in a tunnel. Because you have two cars that you have to back out through. And that concerned the town, the police chief, the traffic engineer. Additionally, when you have a car that's blocked in, that means one car has to pull out, be in the lane of traffic, while the other car then pulls out so that you can pull in. Regardless of the visibility, regardless of any other issues that slip, people are coming towards you, you still have to do that double move, just like you would if there was double parallel parking. But here, every single expert who testified said this is unique and it is dangerous and you shouldn't allow it. The yacht club says, well, there hasn't been any reported accidents, say one. Of course, we're dealing with a town, 40 years and record keeping. But even so, a couple of things we need to note is that, as I said, the yacht club's configuration has changed. More full-time renters, more cars, less visitors in terms of people who use it for a weekend, more units because units are divided in half. And so tandem parking has been a problem, but it has been an increasing problem. Additionally, the person who really has a great view, Jason Smith, who was here, testified at trial and before the council that there have been numerous close calls here. People who are driving along here, the lights out of view, people not paying attention, people backing out, things that he said were accidents waiting to happen. And then you had the police chief at the time, Joe Ray, say, look, it's not necessary that someone die or be crippled before we act to do something that we think is in the best interest of health, safety, and welfare. Now, of course, it's even worse because people who come along the right path have to dodge cars in an unlit, supposedly dangerous area. Snow storage. Courts below just minimize that issue. But a lot more snow storage that needs to be done in this area. Because first of all, town plows everything in the north, so it doesn't plow in the outclubs part. So everything in the north here and everything on Tenderfoot in the east. In Tenderfoot, there's not a lot of room to store it because there's a rec path and the town council wants at least half the rec path kept open so it can be used year round. But here, according to Mr. Coles in the forest record, you can plow everything north and this area will allow you to store snow for the entire season in the general winter. Now, if you move everything north, there is no place to store some snow. So what you have to do is you have to pick it up and move it somewhere. And Mr. Holgerson said, it's time-consuming and costly. And there's more snow along here to do it. There's more snow to haul. You can push snow, according to Mr. Holgerson, to the side, but you can't push piles of it. You have to bring in front-end loaders and load it and haul it away. And we're not talking about a one-time expense. We're talking about every significant snow from here to the end of time the town citizens have to haul away if we were to adopt the yacht club's plans. Now, why should the town's citizens have to pay for that? Pay for the yacht club's own problems? See, yacht club has alternatives. Now, the Court of Appeals didn't really discuss this. Probably, actually. But they had a bunch of alternatives. It's their problem. They say, well, it's dangerous for the young, the old, and the interim to use the town's prep path to walk from the town center parking lots, where overflow parking is supposed to be had, to the yacht club. But they also make their visitors walk that way, whether they're young, old, or infirm, because only people who have plaques can park in that area. So the visitors get to walk there. So that's kind of disingenuous to say that, but they don't designate any of their 40-some-odd spots as handicapped spots, which would be a solution. 10 parking is highly inconvenient, as you can well imagine. Just good luck to move their cars at all times for the night and day. But they don't ever try to see if they can have a shuttle service or a phone service or a volunteer or a phone tree when people need to go from the town box to the yacht club. They don't know what it costs, they don't know how feasible it is, they never tried it, and yet they say, well, we're going to lose lots of money in valuation from our property.
Could I interrupt on this?
Yes.
And I don't mean to throw you off explaining here, but I'm trying to figure out the relationship between what you're arguing now and your statement that you don't think the Goldblatt factors apply at all. And you said kind of quickly in response to the chief's question, that's a takings case. But it was a case, that, I mean, it does seem to me, it's, whether it applies or not seems to be integral to the analysis, even the one that you're going through, if I'm understanding.
Actually, I'm going through an analysis in an attempt, apparently not successfully yet, to show that the town's choice was rational and reasonable.
And so you're taking even a rational basis test
Well,
the exclusion of alternatives?
No, I don't have to do that. But if I do that, I do prevail, because if there's a rational basis for it, and you don't get to decide in the courts whether or not you like another alternative. You have to look at first whether the town has a rational basis for what it did. And I'm trying to show you why I think the town did.
Okay. Could I ask you, during the course of this, if you wanted to say anything about it, I'm a little concerned about why Goldblatt doesn't apply, or if it does apply, and if it doesn't, how it's distinguishable. It is a takings case in a way, but doesn't it deal with the police power and its effect on private interests?
Yes, and I said I didn't think Goldblatt applied because it's a takings case, and because the standards set by this court are different than the standards set in the Goldblatt court. The Goldblatt court went through an analysis of balancing various interests, whereas this court says if you have a valid reason to do what you do for health, safety, and welfare, we're not going to sit back and second guess it.
Is this not a matter of the United States constitutional law? Is that what you're saying?
No, it is a matter of the United States constitutional law, except Goldblatt was a Fifth Amendment case, not a 14th substantive due process case.
Well, Mr. Isn't it true that the HOA couldn't have brought a taking case because they don't own the property?
They could not.
And Goldblatt is a regulated Fifth Amendment taking case, right?
Exactly. But anyway, other alternatives.
Could I ask one follow-up on that? We have a takings problem too in Colorado, right? Under a slightly different provision. And so are you saying the takings standards are different in the state as opposed to the federal takings problem? Is that how you're distinguishing the Fifth Amendment?
No, I'm basis saying for this isn't a takings case at all, whether you go into the Fifth Amendment or inverse condemnation. I mean, you have to do inverse condemnation before you get to the Fifth Amendment anyway. But Jeff, you utilize state remedies. But I'm saying that this isn't a takings case because we're not talking about taking their property.
I can appreciate that. The language in Goldblatt seemed to talk, or are you suggesting that Goldblatt only applies to a titular interest to ownership in that sense, if that's in principle. But it talks about a private interest.
It does, and it's talking about its own property.
And here, it seems like, and I can ask your opponent, I guess, the thrust of the argument and the application of the Goldblatt factors is there is a private interest, even though there's no ownership. Is that not right?
I disagree that there is a private interest in the town's own property. We're looking at this based upon whether or not it's arbitrary and capricious, whether there's a rational relationship. If we were dealing with a fundamental right, which we're not, because if there's a fundamental right to park, then we're all...
I agree. If you're a suspect classification...
Then we go to a strict construction.
But if you have, as Goldblatt suggests, it was more direct regulation of the property, the person who was complaining. But if there is police power, exercise of regulatory powers, and it affects private property, or the value of private property, is that the argument that it is affecting a private interest?
That's their argument. I disagree with it. But I'm also giving you information in case you decide to employ the Goldblatt test to show that we win under that reason also.
Okay, fine.
Well, Council, can I just follow up on that? So, I guess, is it your position that this is public property and you can regulate it however you want, so it's not really a regulatory taking?
It's not a regulatory taking, it's our property.
And you can do whatever you want.
As long as it's not done through corruption or there's no rational basis related to health, safety, and welfare. We can do what we want with our property.
Okay, thank you.
That's not my standard. It's the standard that the Supreme Court set in a number of cases, most recently in the Greenwood Village Centennial case. The alternative, I'm going to go through them very quickly. This is the front yard of the path bus. Yes, it might be costly to get access to either here, this homeowner, or reconstructing. But that's not an option the yacht club has employed, and yet plenty of parking there, and an option that should have been considered if the yacht club really believes that it's lost value. And if they're purchased property, the yacht club's response to that is simply, well, we asked the town. But there's an exhibit that says the town might approve purchases of property for a parking lot. And secondly, even if the staff said, they wouldn't, if the yacht club argues. That's not a staff decision. That's a zoning decision, quasi-judicial. Staff can't obligate town council to a decision, and there was never an attempt to buy property or ask for rezoning. I'm going to reserve if I might the rest of my time.
You may.
Thank you.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of this court, may it please the court, my name is Richard Holm. I'm here on behalf of the respondents, the Yacht Club Condominium Homeowners Association, and two of the individual owners of condominiums. I'll be referring to them, I hope, most of the time as homeowners to distinguish, but they were the plaintiffs below, they were the appellees at the Court of Appeals. Although Mr. Nathan has not made a major issue of it in this oral argument, certainly in the briefs, there are substantial discussions that I want to make clear to this court are not involved in this case. In this case, the homeowners never contended that Ordinance 04-09, which approved the road reconstruction contract, exceeded the town's police powers. We did not assert that the ability of the town to regulate, to construct roads, to build roads, to protect bicyclists, to protect pedestrians, is in any way beyond their police power. With respect to Ordinance 1009, the homeowners did not contend that that exceeded the town's police powers to regulate parking. This was never an issue in the case. It was disclaimed in the complaint in the case. It was disclaimed in the findings of fact and conclusions of law by the trial court.
Mr. Hull?
Yes.
I'm sure what you're saying is accurate. And you're going to say we did an as-applied challenge, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. So how do you actually, in fact, differentiate that? Isn't that, in effect, even though you're right, technically, isn't that essentially limiting the police powers by applying the gold black test?
It is.
As if you owned the property and they were taking
it. It is.
That's what's confusing to me about this case.
It is applying it by, it is limiting it under very limited circumstances, which Goldblatt acknowledges and which this court has acknowledged. In 50 years ago, 49 years ago to be precise, this court said in Apple versus Denver, even though an ordinance is a proper exercise of the police power, it must in its application to specific property not be an unreasonable demand upon the individual for the benefit of the public welfare. So since at least 1964, this court has recognized that there can be laws that are valid under the police power, but not as applied.
Well,
that was not a taking.
Well, Mr. Hull, no argument. The issue is, to me at least, for me, is really part of the question that Justice Coates asked under your opponent. The reference of interest in the property, obviously the condominium has an interest in tandem parking, no question about it. But they were parking on someone else's property, to wit, the town's. So how do we get to obviate the inability to claim the takings by essentially using the same test? And isn't that, in effect, limiting? I mean, many people have various interests in property, not in property, but in actions by municipalities under the police power. So that to me seems the crux of this issue. What I don't understand, you know, I didn't read that case 49 years ago, but was that brought by a homeowners association that didn't own the interest in the property? I don't know.
It was brought in Apple, it was brought by homeowners who had been required to undertake certain repairs within their homes.
But that they own the property for which they had to claim the title, as Justice Coates says, titular?
They own the property in which the town had said, this is how you have to regulate your property. And they objected to that. In fact, it ended up being upheld as a proper exercise of the police power. But this was not town property that it was trying to protect. And the town property that we're protecting here is right-of-way. Right-of-way that is obviously preserved for their use, if they choose to do so, to build roads and so on, as long as they can do it in ways that do not, beyond a reasonable doubt, affect an unreasonable action that severely injures an individual or a group of individuals. So there are substantial limitations on the argument that we have made, which the trial judge, after listening to 3 days of testimony, 12 witnesses, 13 witnesses, about 100 exhibits, looked at and said, this, beyond a reasonable doubt, specifically, beyond a reasonable doubt, is unreasonable. And in argument on that, Mr. Nathan talks about evidence that they put on, which the trial court did not find raised a reasonable doubt, and which, curiously, the town in its entire brief, in its entire discussion today, has not suggested that one single one of those facts is not supported by evidence in the record. So if this court is going to buy Mr. Nathan's arguments, it's going to have to do so on his cherry-picked evidence that doesn't include any of the cross-examination, that doesn't include any of the contrary evidence, and say we are going to overturn the trial court's findings, not because there's no support in the evidence, but because we kind of like Mr. Nathan's story.
Counsel, can I stop you just right there? Can we go back to the standard, though? I mean, it just seems like we have to decide on a standard before we decide whether any of the evidence is relevant or how it will play out. And so can you go back to his argument that this is government property and they can do what they want with it, basically within reason, like a rational basis, but that, I take it that's his argument. Is that wrong?
I think under the facts of this case, it is. What happened in this particular case is that in 1965 through 1967, the yacht club came in and applied for permits from the town. The town granted those permits, and in reliance on those permits, the three buildings of the yacht club were built. So at that point in time, the town did not require on-site parking. Indeed, this court said it couldn't, so it didn't. Although they were told that this court might reconsider that decision, they chose not to try and get this court to reconsider that decision. 7 years later, the court did reconsider the decision and in fact held that on-site parking could be required. But in any event, at the time they approved this particular set of buildings, they knew there were only two alternatives for where parking could occur. One of them was on-site parking, but they couldn't do that or chose not to do that. The second one is parking on the property that might be available anyway. And in this particular case, the yacht club did this hatched area here, right next to the yacht club, where it could park some of the cars. It had room, and ultimately people started using it that way. This was supposed to be common areas, but they started using it for parking, and 43 cars could park there. At the time these units were built, they had 50 condominium units and 16 lock-offs or units that could be sublanded to skiers or whatever. So they had effectively 66 units. That was at the time they were built. Mr. Nathan says, this occurred over the years. It did not occur over the years. It was done at the time they were built. So they knew what was going on. There were 43 cars by comparison, by the way. If that had been built after the Supreme Court had reversed itself and after the new code was passed, they would require a similar building to have 101 spaces. So the second area where they might be able to park was the 43 spaces that were there. The third area was on the right-of-way. They knew that at the time. And they nonetheless approved these particular units. So they knew that they were allowing the yacht club people to park in the right-of-way. That was not a major problem. There was very little development around it. The yacht club was the first building that was built there. The town went ahead and approved other buildings. They allowed things, for example, like the right-of-way here to be turned into a lawn in front of another condominium unit. They allowed lots of these areas to be used as lawns, to have trees growing on them, and that kind of stuff, which ended up limiting the amount of parking that the yacht club people could use. So they ended up starting to do the tandem parking. Virtual parking, one car and on the yacht club property, and one car in the right-of-way. And they did that starting in the mid-80s. So for some 25 years, they were allowed to do that. Nobody came in and said it was illegal until May of 2009, which was when they passed this ordinance allowing the reconstruction project.
But other things, I just want to be sure I know the facts. Other things happened. They put in this path, right? That wasn't there originally.
The rec path was part of the project.
Originally. This is a new project. This is a reconfigured project.
There was no path during the original time.
Okay, yeah. What you're taking us back to a time when I assume there was a lot less pressure on the town of Dillon with respect to recreation and so on.
That's
and,
correct.
And are you basically arguing that a land use permit made a long time ago stops the town from using its property to adjust to the other issues?
In point of fact, we were arguing that. We did argue that
The trial court ruled that that did happen and ruled that equitable estoppel barred the town from preventing us from doing this. That was an issue that was not dealt with by the Court of Appeals and which this court did not consider.
Right.
But it was granted by the trial court.
Okay. But not reached.
Pardon?
But not reached, I mean.
No.
That's not an issue before us?
It's not before us here.
Right.
The court did not
admit
it here. But it was, it's in the trial court findings and conclusions.
But just, I'm sorry, just to pick up on that point, to clarify the posture of this case, the Court of Appeals ruled strictly on the police power claim and didn't address the trial court's holdings with respect to retrospective legislation or equitable estoppel. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So even if we were to disagree with your position, this case would need to go back to the Court of Appeals to address the town of Dillon's arguments with respect to those two rulings. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So in any event, when the town comes to forward to argue with respect to the trial judge's findings of fact, as I've already noted, they do not challenge the fact that there was inadequate evidence to support those findings or that there was no support in the record. They do not argue that the law that was being applied was incorrectly applied to those facts. Rather, they do use their own version of the facts to try and get there. They never mention in the course of their briefs that the damage to the yacht club was up to $3 million, up to 30% of the total value of the yacht club because of this. They never mention that they didn't need to do any of this in order to reconstruct the roads or in order to have a rec path or in order to have drainage for snowmobile. Those were the things that the road construction project was designed to accomplish. What could have been done? What could have been done is they could have just, instead of cutting off the right-of-way so that they only left us with 3 feet of right-of-way next to the property, thereby, of course, preventing anybody from doing any tandem parking, although there wasn't anything in the ordinance that said you've got to stop tandem parking. They could have put it right along this northern edge and still left plenty of room. They didn't have to bring this rec path down right next to it in order to discourage anybody from going across and parking in the right-of-way, the expanded right-of-way that they had not created in front of the single-family homes. And they did not need to pass, well, they did end up passing in ordinance number 1009, 6 months after the case was filed, where we had pointed out to them that there was no law that prohibited parking in the right-of-way. This is not unusual, by the way. Think about Denver. There's cars parked in the street, not just in the right-of-way, on both sides of the street, narrowing the lanes to one lane. And that is not something that has been causing major concerns. The right-of-way is frequently used for parking. This is nothing new. And they had been using it that way for 40 some odd years. Then the town comes in and says, we're going to pass an ordinance that says we're going to amend the word street to add to the words right-of-way. It had never been there before. So now no parking on the streets became no parking on the right-of-ways. They said, we will allow the chief of police to come in and designate areas where parking will not be allowed on the right-of-way. Keeping in mind that there's all sorts of parking on the right-of-way around Dillon. So the police chief comes in, looks at, presumptively, the miles and miles of right-of-way throughout the town of Dillon, and says, we're going to ban parking on 500 feet of that total right-of-way. That 500 feet is going to be from here to there, right directly at the yacht club. Why?
Well, to prevent tandem parking is what I heard.
Pardon?
To prevent tandem parking because it's a safety problem.
Because of alleged safety problems. And that was one thing that was tried a lot in front of the trial court. And the trial court found, as a matter of fact, that it wasn't a problem. This street, Bull Run Circle, has one car every 3 to 5 minutes
driving down that street. Tenderfoot is busy. It has one car every minute. And in 40 years, there has never been an accident by somebody moving out of Tandon parking into the traffic way. The only accident that occurred was when a city employee was driving a snowplow and flipped a car that was parked in Tandon parking. But there's never been any accidents reported. Now that they say, well, we don't know, well, all the answers, they don't know. They haven't been able to establish that there is any actual traffic safety.
Council, may I have you pause for just a moment? Yes. Here, and I let Justice Ide and the Chief, I'm kind of interested in the Court of Appeals application of the Goldblatt factors. I took a look, and perhaps you can help me, because perhaps I didn't look hard enough, but I had trouble finding any case in the 50 or so years since that decision that actually applied those factors to strike down some municipal ordinance as a violation of the police power. As I, the only one I'm aware of is our Court of Appeals published opinion in this case, and I'm just wondering, I worry a little bit just given the timing of that case, the development of takings and substantive due process at that era in Supreme Court jurisprudence, and what's really happened to that. Supreme Court itself doesn't seem to have ever applied those factors. So why should we hear?
I can't cite you to 10 cases that have applied Goldblatt since the time it was adopted. I would suggest a couple of things. First of all, the Goldblatt factors, when coupled with the requirement for employment to prove that there is a significant, no menace, that there are clear alternatives, and that there's substantial damage to the plaintiff who's bringing the case, and that you've got to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt, causes there to be not many people who are willing to either bring such a case or can prevail in such a case. I think this is a very rare circumstance where it's a perfect storm of things that occurred leading to the fact that the Goldblatt factors would apply. But furthermore, when this court has looked at it and said you can have a proper exercise of the police power unless, when applicable to particular property, it ends up putting an unreasonable demand on the private citizen. When this court has said in Wood Brothers in 1977, the formula to see if police power action is constitutional balances individual hardship versus public benefit. When U.S. West Communication says reasonableness is a fact question that needs to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis, it makes perfect sense in saying how you flesh out determining what is a unreasonable demand on an individual, what is a balancing of the individual hardship against the public benefit, to use the three factors that Goldblatt used. Yes, it was a takings case, but they weren't talking just about takings. They were talking about police power.
But in the context of the takings, in the context of what was essentially a takings claim, and a municipal ordinance that directly impacted the private property of that resident.
Which is similar to our situation, but what ends up happening there is that one of the major reasons that Goldblatt did not throw out the city ordinance in that particular case was because it found, it said the trial court had found, as a matter of fact, that there was no damage, no economic damage to the plant. They just didn't find that there was any damage to them because there had been a big piece of property with a lake on it and other property, and the landowner said, well, we can't use the other property. And he said, no, there's nothing to preclude you from using the other property.
Mr. Holmes,
can't dig another 25-foot deep lake.
Let me see if I can come at a different way. Is it necessary for us, in order for you to prevail and to affirm the Court of Appeals on the police power issue, for us to adopt the Goldblatt test, even, or the substance of the test? Or can you prevail on another standard?
Well, I think we can prevail on the Apple standard, on the Wood Brothers standard, on the fact that this is an as applied to specific property, this is an unreasonable burden on the individual for the benefit of the public welfare. And that's certainly what the trial court found. I mean, you can't take the Goldblatt factors and then say, well, they found all those, but it really isn't an unreasonable burden. And so I don't think you have to adopt the Goldblatt standards. I think they are useful in terms of being able to flesh out what this court's been talking about for the last 49 years and on multiple occasions, which is towns are not free just because they don't like something to go ahead and try and do away with it.
Do you think it made a difference, just right on this analysis, that Apple, for instance, and I think our other cases as well, when they talk about application to specific property and unreasonable demand on the individual, they are expressly talking about an ordinance that causes that individual to have to do something to his private property. And the question is, although the ordinance generally may be passed police powers tests, if it affects an individual with regard to doing something to his property that's unreasonable, then it may fail as applied. Well, is there any situation you can think of where affecting the property of someone, the individual, is not by making them do something to their property or changing the effect of their property, but rather not allowing them to use adjoining public property?
I can't give you a case where this issue has come up. Let me draw, if the court were to rule that's the rule that applies here, let me give you, well, there's several examples. Number one, first of all, this then allows towns all over the state to say, we're going to do away with parking on our streets because it's our property. And not because we have any particular reason we're doing it, but just because it's our property. That would create havoc.
Excuse me. An exercise of police power, I thought, had to be not arbitrary and not capricious. Has to have a rational basis.
Certainly. Our rational basis is we want to improve the city, which is an authorized police power objective by this court. Aesthetics can be taken into account. So, and you've got to prove that it doesn't apply beyond a reasonable doubt. So they say, well, we want it to be pretty. Or, well, there may be traffic accidents along here because there's cars bust along the streets.
Unfortunately, I'd have to say to you that may be actually a political question between the town and its citizens. I mean, I doubt that the city and county of Denver is going to say, you know, you can't live downtown anymore unless you drive a bicycle. I mean, you know.
But there's nothing that such a ruling in this case wouldn't include that.
Okay.
I mean, I
what I'm saying is, you know, you have political options with respect to what you just conjured up.
And I recognize that, and I also
same thing here. I'm sure that they're listening to property owners, but they also have a lot of other citizen interests to balance in these kinds of.
Well, it's
issues.
It's very. I mean, first of all, there was no question about the fact that the road reconstruction project should take place. We supported that.
Right.
And so people who live in the rest of Dillon say, hey, do we want to have better roads? Of course we want to have better roads. Are these people going to get hurt? We need better roads. Let's just do better roads. But there was nothing about better roads, and this hadn't been coming. I mean, when you have a lot of these people coming in and saying, well, you know, we're in favor of this project and we're against any alternatives, it wasn't their ox that was being bored. They could bore anybody, they could bore their yacht club ox and be perfectly happy with it. In fact, in the course of discussions that were held, and this was testified to in the record, in the course of discussions held with the city manager in March of 2009, the city manager said the best thing that could happen to the yacht club is if a developer tore it down and redeveloped it. That's, I believe, what was motivating the actions that were taken here. In terms, then they come in and say, well, it's really snowstorm. You know, there haven't been any accidents for 40 years, and we can speculate there's going to be, but there's snow storage, and there's all. Well, when we asked them about the snow storage, the public works director who was in charge of all the snow storage. I said, well, why can't you just move this stuff down to this part of the right-of-way, which is a lawn? Put the snow there. He said, well, people don't appreciate it when we put snow in front of their property. Not on their property, in front of their property. So, the simple solution to that is, we don't want to put snow there, let's just cost the yacht club $3 million, and let's create a huge problem for physical safety of the people who are using the yacht club. Mr. Nathan says, well, they just had to use the public parking, and all the other condos do too. Well, all the other condos are up on top of the hill where their public parking is. The public parking is a half mile away on top of a hill, and the only way to get there is either down an unlit, snow-covered, dark path, or you can go down Tenderfoot, which is an 18% grade and which is so steep that they close it off for much of the winter so that cars can't go on it because cars are too dangerous on it. There's no sidewalks along there, but let's have these people walk down there. Well, imagine yourselves, not yourselves, because this court's all healthy, but imagine what the impact of this is to elderly people, to people who have to carry their bags from the upper lot down to the yacht club, people who have to take their two-year-old grandchild down, people who are carrying their groceries down. This, and you can only park there for one day, so you have to go back and forth every day and move it to another place while you're up there. This is what was being done, and this is why, among other things, the Court of Appeals said, what you've done is increased the danger that the people who are renters or owners of the condos are going to do. Now, you can ask yourselves whether you would be willing to buy a condo or even to rent a condo when you were told there's a very strong likelihood you're going to have to park half a mile away. You're going to have to walk from there at night on an unlit street, carrying your bags.
Just remind me, how many units are there?
66.
60. How many parking spaces are there?
43.
Okay, and none more can be built. I mean, that's basically what you're arguing.
Well, they can't be because the city won't let them. Okay. Now they say, oh, well, you can park here in this lovely green area that is the thing that gives the value of the yacht club because we've got a great view across the lake. There's not enough room here to even build a road into there. There's not enough room here or there to build a road into there. They say, oh, well, that's okay. You can just rent down part of the condo, rebuild the end of the condo and put a road in. That's reasonable. So what they have done is created a situation where they have abolished most of the much of the parking of the yacht club, caused a 30% loss in value of the yacht club on the basis of an ordinance that was to rebuild a road and put in a rec path, which didn't require, had no findings with respect to the traffic accident problem that's there, had no findings as the snow storage. It was simply a reconstruction project. And instead, they come in, make it impossible for people who are renting the units to use it in any rational way.
Council, let me ask one quick question that was confusing me a little bit. Looking at your amended complaint, I don't see any express reference to substantive due process. It simply says that the actions of the town is unjust and does not fairly relate to protection of the town's health, safety, and welfare, and that it had an insignificant impact on this property. The trial court, in its ruling, characterizes this as consequently, this is a violation of substantive due process. Is there a distinction in your mind? Is this a substantive due process claim? And if it is technically really a substantive due process claim, why isn't it simply rational basis review?
Well, because
it's so we don't have a fundamental right to say we don't have a
well, you know, I mean, in essence, I would argue that the court found that it wasn't a rational basis for it. I think that's essentially, I mean, this court has defined a rational basis as being something that's reasonable. So I think the findings overlap. Yes, I think it's a substantive due process claim. I think anything relating to just a police power kind of claim, that's where it falls, is under substantive due process under the 14th Amendment. In any event, my time is up. I urge the court to affirm the trial judge and the Court of Appeals and to apply the findings of fact that were adopted by the trial court, since there's been no suggestion that those facts were not supported by ample evidence in the record.
Thank you.
I thank the court for its attention.
Ms. Nathan, we'll give you an extra minute.
Thank you. Well, let me correct a couple of things. First of all, this is all the other units aren't outside the town lot. There's condo units south of this that are farther away from the town lots. Second of all, we haven't prevented them from buying or creating their own property in any way. They never asked to buy property, they never asked for rezoning, they never asked. The only thing they did ask at one point was that the town assist, because we have an easement right here, the town assist in getting an access, and we said, of course. So this is their problem, but they keep trying to say it's the town's problem.
Well, they can I just start with it? They say it's your problem because you allowed them to do this for many, many, many years.
Well, in the records, there are at least three letters that tell the yacht club, you can't use our right-of-way as your private parking lot. In 1992, there was a letter that said, you've got to come up with your own solution. Please make us a proposal. Trapper found they didn't make a proposal.
Well, I guess I understand that, but you never forced them off until now, right?
No, we actually have ticketed them from time to time. We've been pretty generous in as the time goes on. But again, you're talking about essentially adverse possession or equitable estoppel. The equitable estoppel in this case is that the town said the developer of the yacht club put off street parking on here. The developer said, the federal Supreme Court tells me I don't have to, so if you do force me to, I'll sue you, which would be a constitutional violation. And the trial court said, well, you shouldn't have taken that up because it was reversed 7 years later. If that's equitable estoppel, then I guess I'm not sure I understand. It's not supposed to be applied against the town to make it violate its own laws. The point that this court made about all the cases cited, Apple, the property, you have to do certain things. Police powers, you have to do certain improvements to your property. Goldblatt, it's your property. And the Supreme Court goes on to say, debatable questions as to the reasonableness are not for the courts, but for the legislature. Standard Oil versus Merrill. We may not set aside an ordinance because compliance with it is burdensome. Once again, dealing with the plaintiff's own property and the requirements that the town was imposing upon them to bury their oil tanks. There is no evidence in this record that the basis upon which we made our decision was beyond a reasonable doubt unreasonable. There is evidence that there is a reasonable debate about how this should have been done. And there is an analysis in the record and in the exhibits, exhibit 20 and 29, by the staff going, here's why we think that this solution is the best. There's testimony by the only expert traffic engineer who testified that said this solution is the best. I'm saying that not only do we meet our burden of proving a rational relationship, I'm saying that the evidence supported, the undisputed evidence supported the fact that we made a good decision. When you get to ordinance 1009, which is the traffic ordinance, I'm going to make a couple of points. First of all, it applied to everyone in town. Second of all, it didn't change anything. It said we reaffirm a practice that we have allowed the police chief to go ahead and make these decisions in consultation with others. And it was to avoid an argument over whether the model traffic code prevented this type of parking or not. Now,
Did you have my timer?
You have your time.
Okay. So, the ICLA didn't treat it any differently. They didn't make an equal protection claim. They can't because it's similarly situated, and there was no legislation that was filed that didn't affect everyone in town. And so, the fact is that I know the ICLA is trying to pull at the heartstrings of every court it has gone, saying, this is really affecting us. But the point is that the solution that they propose affects everyone in town. And everyone in town got to have their say in front of the legislature. And the legislature picked something that was reasonable. And if courts have to review all of those and see whether they agree with the legislature, then that means the courts are the arbiter of every parking, every road construction project, everything that might affect someone else that they don't like. That's not what this court has held. That's not what this court has allowed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to thank both attorneys for your arguments and the briefs. The case will be submitted on the briefs. The court will be in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.